D-H-Z, go!
I used to say I'm the boss. They've hit at the most. They're doing real good, yeah. I would say they're the boss. They bring real information. If you don't know, I'm set nation. Dropping knowledge on the daily. Really?
Really?
These boys bring it on real.
Recording live from the SEC Sports Pub, here's Heath Elsenson, Tomas Mauricio, and your host, David Romero.
There it is. Welcome in another week, another edition. It's the BS and Beer podcast crew recording live from the SEC Sports Pub. With me, Tomas Mauricio, Tyler Kissner on the board. I'm Dave Romero, and I'm your host. And for the next 2 hours, we'll be talking more Saints and useless information that anyone needs to know about. So from Ruston to Monroe, Farmerville to Jonesboro, grab a drink, sit back, relax, because we're going to do the SEC Sports Pub and 97.7 Sports Talk Radio, BS and Beer style. Tomas, Baltimore goes down 24-23. My brother from another mother, Tucker, misses an extra point.
222 out of 223.
And we win the game. I'm sitting here, Tomas. I'm stressing. I'm wondering, are we going
to
win the coin toss in overtime?
About,
yeah, I mean, are we going to get the win? Are they going to get the ball first? Or the win in our back? You know, all this stuff I'm going through. And he misses it.
Yeah.
And I saw this meme on the internet, and it has like the picture of the field goal attempt, and then in the background, kind of, you know, photoshopped a light Tom Benson. He's kind of puckered up.
Yeah.
And it looks like he's blowing on the ball.
Just enough.
Between this game and the Browns, you're talking about two games where we got some divine. Do you believe in divine interventions? Where I'm going with this, Tomas?
Here's what I would say. You know, a lot of people. I saw a lot of people tweeting that out. But here's what I'm going to say to you. Think back to the 7-9 seasons, right? We had a field goal blocked, ran it all the way back for a touchdown.
Oh yeah, Denver.
Remember? Denver, right? Then we had another one blocked, and they got it, and they went in and scored. And you know, so hey, it's the way the ball bounces. It could be a year of destiny. Because that's what you need. You need to have good health. You need to have the ball bounce your way a couple of times when it doesn't seem likely. And possibly that's what we have going on this year.
Well, and again, and I know you kind of alluded to it, but, I mean, a lot of similarities. And, again, not the same team, not the way, winning.
No.
But 2009, we had breaks. Is this similar to maybe the Washington Redskins game or maybe the Dolphins game?
Yeah.
Remember the Dolphins game?
That's correct, too.
But here's the difference. While I'm trying to find some parallels, the Dolphins game, it's kind of like we were outplayed. We didn't show up that day.
Yeah.
But then we got breaks. We got some turnovers.
Right,
we got different things like that.
Right.
This game, what I'm most impressed about, Tomas, was that it seems like we out-Baltimore Ravened the Baltimore Ravens.
Well, we did, no doubt. And let me tell you why I was upset that we let them score, and I'm going to say something about it later in the show. But when I was sitting there waiting for them to kick the extra point, my thought wasn't negative. My thought was, you know, here are the Ravens, a team that hasn't let anybody score on them in the fourth quarter, and we dropped 17 on them in the fourth quarter. And I'm thinking, well, dude, if we're going to drop 17 on them in the fourth quarter, we drop another 7 on them in the overtime, and we win that too.
Right.
So I felt very confident for our team offensively. Defensively, some issues. But I've done a little research. Getting ready for the show, so I got some interesting information about the defense, which we'll get to during the show.
All right. Well, okay. So we have Breeze gets his 500th touchdown.
Now he's at 501, though,
because he had a second one.
Right.
The thing about it is this is a team that hadn't given up a passing touchdown.
So,
listen, there was no point where I thought that, oh, man, we're going to have a hard time. Again, I didn't think those points would be plentiful, but I wasn't like, oh, there's no way we're going to score a touchdown. It's just the way the Saints went about it. It all business. It was. I tell you what, let's get this show started. Then we come back. We have the MyBookie picks. We're going to do the top 10. You can tell everybody who's doing within.
All right,
sounds
good.
So let's do that.
Tonight on BS and Beer Radio Broadcast Corporation Incorporated, it's the Action Suspense Airline Highway at 9:30, followed by this year's award-winning suspense thriller, Camp Beast.
next. It's hilarious family fun suitable for all ages with Drew, Sean, and Mickey. Then it's Sex in the Cell Block, the hot new show that's too racy for daytime. That's Sex in the Cell Block at 11 tonight. Then it's Saints Talk with Dave, Tomas, Heath, and the BS and Beer podcast crew. Every night here on the BS&B Radio Broadcast Corporation Incorporated, a limited liability corporation.
That's right. Now you have the rundown of the BS&B network and what's going on tonight. You don't want to miss that stuff. Tomas, we have to quickly, we need to go over those pick'ems, give some shout-outs to the people, the top 10.
All right.
I'm continuing my slide, though. I tell you what, it looks so good. And then, man.
Because you were telling me you were winning. I was like, okay, well, I'm winning a few, but I don't know. What. No, I didn't slide, so okay. But I'm going to give you the top 10.
All right, top 10.
Here we go. Rob, 22278. Bill Gluckman. Clinton Rebel. Lord Boudreaux. Jay-Z Picks. Speed Bump McGee. Javelin. Scottish Hudat. Nola Girl. Makes her first appearance, I think. And Hudat Tudat 2018.
That's
your top 10.
That's the first I've heard of
Nola Girl.
Nola Girl. Yeah. So welcome to the top 10, Nola Girl.
There you go.
And we'll now, just to clarify, because sometimes I think we get confused, is that the top 10 for this week or for the total?
Standings.
Okay, I like that. I like that. So Nola Girl, we haven't heard. She's been probably sitting there at 11, 12, 13.
Yeah, she's ninth on this list, 9 out of 96.
The problem is man, you can. It's like the tortoise and the hare. You can be 12th, 13th, whatever. If you do that every week, sooner or later, somebody's going to have that 6 or 7.
All right, and then you move up.
You know, I'm saying 12. If you're getting 12 every week, I'm talking more like maybe 9 or 10.
Yeah.
You know, you sit around 8, 9, 10.
Let's say you're in the top 15.
Right.
You know, and then you keep sitting right around there. And sooner or later, somebody in the top 10 goes, oops.
You're right. And then you're right in there.
And then you're back up.
Right in there. All right. Yeah. So one of the things, and again, his old team, Uncle Ben Watson catches the 500th touchdown.
Yep.
I don't know why that's difficult for me to say, but the 500th touchdown. And but
because
he actually
list
yes, there's he actually had a pretty big game. I mean, he caught a lot of passes, crucial passes.
Yes.
It seemed like the Saints thought the tight end was a matchup issue with the Ravens, because we even saw your guy Arnold catching some passes,
indeed.
Including a big play where the Saints stopped the Ravens in the fourth quarter on fourth down. Instead of the Saints running the ball like we thought they would, traditional wisdom would say, throw that ball or run the ball.
Run the ball, yeah.
The Saints go, and Breeze goes deep. I mean, it's like a, I don't know, 25, 30 yard, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but like a 30 yard pass downfield to the most unlikely receiver of the bunch, Arnold, and he caught the ball.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I made note earlier in the game, he actually had like an in route that Breeze threw him the ball, and I was criticizing him because it was just such a terrible route. He just basically just kind of ran a banana route in, and the defender was all over him. I felt like he could have ran that route with a little bit more suddenness.
Yes.
Stick his foot in the ground.
Right.
But he just kind of, lazily lists to the – that reminds me of a TV show. But anyway, I'm going to digress. List to the left, and those of you who know what I'm talking about, send me an email. But he just kind of lazily lists to the left. And it was an incomplete pass. So, and you know what? Before the end of the segment, we have big breaking news this week. And I know we're going to go into depth, but we at least got to touch on it here in the first segment. I'm waiting all day, the last several days, for Peterson to get traded to the Saints.
You're taking a shower with your phone.
Yeah, you saw that, right? Yeah. I mean, I got to
write some smart angly thing, but I said, nah, it's all right.
I had to keep, I told everybody on Twitter, I said, man, I'm a
waist up only, please.
Yeah, I got out of the shower. I need to know if anything happened. Why? But I had my arm outstretched so I don't get my phone wet.
Next thing
you know, we trade for Eli Apple.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to be interested to hear your thoughts on what you think, because your dude, Crowley, is destined for the bench now.
Or maybe
nickel. But but one way or another, I don't know.
I have some words.
You have some input on that?
Yes.
Hey, don't forget, send us. We do have some hotline calls.
We do. What's that number, Dave?
701-901-1295. Give us a call. Leave your message. Or, go to old-fashioned way. Send us
an email.
Yeah. bsandbeer@icloud.com.
There you go.
Get in touch with us. Let us know your thoughts. We want to put you on the show.
Or you can real old mail, and you can send us a, BS and Beer, post office button. No.
Yeah, you can just put a stamp on it, lick that stamp, and send it to us. Hey, it's 97.7 Sports Talk Radio and the BS and Beer podcast. Don't go anywhere. We're just getting this train rolling.
Choo-choo. You know, ever since we started this podcast, people have been asking us for advice. Usually, it's what team to bet on this week. The truth is, we don't know who's going to win. But if you think you know, you got to check out my bookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why we always tell people to bet with my bookie. Trust me, fellas, they are your best bet this season. They've been in business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. Lay down some cash and win big today. Visit MyBookie online. That's MyBookie. And don't forget, you play, you win, you get paid.
Welcome back. It's the BS and Beer Podcast. Tomas Mauricio, Dave Romero, 97.7 Sports Talk Radio, Saints. I just love the way they won this game, Tomas. 24-23, beat the Baltimore Ravens at their own game, running the ball, playing tough defense. I mean, we had some issues. We had a few struggles. But I would say, generally speaking, very proud at how the Saints play this game and how they performed. And there was a little bit unusual. It's not what I would consider stereotypical Saints football. There were times in the past, and I would even say with the Baltimore Ravens, that we couldn't really play with them, and we weren't capable of playing that type of football. The type of football where it's smash mouth, it's run the ball, even though you're not getting a lot of productivity. Don't take quite as many chances and just rely on your defense. And the Saints did it, and I'm just really impressed with how they did that.
Well, here I'm going to say to you that I think it was an excellent game plan by Coach Payton. And I heard an interview with him where he was talking about, you know, in a game like this, you hand off the ball, you get 3 yards on a run, you got to say, hey, that's successful. That's good. You know, you're not looking to make 15. Three, you're doing good. You know, and he also said, you can't expect to go back and do the same thing you've done over and over and you've lost four.
Right.
You have to do something different. One of the things that they did that I really liked was that on third down, after the second down, they just come right up to the line. Mm-hmm. No huddle. Didn't give Baltimore a chance to regroup, set themselves up for that big pressure on third down.
Sure.
So I thought that was an excellent, excellent game plan that he put in place. Now, I'm still not happy with Mark Ingram, but that's another story later.
Boy, you're just on fire, huh? We got 2 hours.
I got plenty to go through, so we'll get it.
I tell you what, we can get started if you're ready with some good, the bad, and ugly.
Absolutely.
You're a bounty hunter. Man's got to do something for a living these days. Dying ain't much of a living, boy.
It's time for Dating the Bad and the Ugly.
All right, so good, the bad, and ugly.
Yes, sir.
You want to go first?
Sure.
All right, let's hear it.
All right, here's my good. Offensive line. Mm-hmm. Going into this game, I was a little worried. We had Pete out, concussion.
Mm-hmm.
Warford had a bad back. They mm-hmm. weren't sure he was going to play.
That's right.
And I was like, oh, my gosh, Bushrod, God bless him.
Oh, my God.
You know, tragic loss in his family. And, of course, as I tweeted out and repeat again, you know, our thoughts and prayers from all of us here at BS and Beer out to Jermon. And, you know, God will help you, brother.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I was thinking, oh, my gosh, you know, we're down to, like, we signed Ola. Oh, my. When I saw that we signed Ola, I thought, oh, no, please, dear Jesus, surely Tyson Hill can play guard, can't he?
That's right. I didn't think about it, but.
So my good is going to be the offensive line because I really feel, all things considered, they played really very, very well. In particular, I'm going to call out a man who practiced all week at right tackle, because right guard, because they weren't sure that Warford was going to make it. And then when Larivas got hurt, Cameron Tom, came running in and started at left guard, where he hadn't practiced that position all week. Yeah, he got blown up one time that I can remember. But all things considered,
absolutely,
man, he did a great job. So my game ball on the offensive line goes to Cameron Tom.
I like that.
But the offensive line is my good for this week.
Well, you know what? Mine, I guess it's going to be in the same thing. I'm going to give my good to the offensive strategy slash play calling.
Yeah.
And again, you know how in other shows we're like, oh, I want to give the good to somebody. Like, you can give it to Drew Brees every week if you wanted to. And I like to try to find the person that kind of contributed that, you know, if you're working off the curb.
Yeah.
Not the obvious.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to me, I thought that this was and again, I'm always the one, I'll be the first to admit, I'm the one that says, look, you got an all-world quarterback. You put the ball in his hands and let him take care of it.
Unlike Eli Manning?
Unlike Eli Manning.
Oh, we're just gonna take a quarterback sneak. Oop, didn't make it.
No.
That's right. Do a quarterback sneak again. Oop, didn't make it.
Yeah, that was insane. I'm the one who's defending. I'm like, look, you got there by passing the ball. Pass the ball. So when the Saints went in there and they really stuck with it, they stuck with the game plan.
Yeah.
They ran when it wasn't super productive. Come the second half, all of a sudden, there goes Kamara for 8 yards. There goes Ingram for 6 yards. There goes, you know, Taysom Hill on a sweep for 12 yards. My point is, it started working. You actually see the fruits of the hard work and the game planning and the running the ball and the smash mouth that the defense, their defense was tired.
Yep.
And that's when you
start. Well, yeah, that first 20-play drive, even though we got nothing out of it.
Right, right. You went for it on fourth down.
Yeah. Several times.
Three times. Four total, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, the last one we didn't make.
Right. So it's one of those things where that, to me, was my good. And I'm impressed with the Saints because I now see them when you can do what you do or did to the Baltimore defense, that means they can win on the road against quality teams, not just, you know, go out and win against, you know, I don't know, Tampa Bay comes to mind or Buffalo. You're talking about you can go up against quality teams and win on the road because you can bring your running game, you can bring your defense. And quite frankly, that was the most impressive to me because it says something more than just about that drive, about that game, about that situation. It says something about the team itself and what they're capable of.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that's the way to look at it. So that's our goods.
Okay, good. So are we going to jump right into the bad ugly?
Sure, I guess so.
All right, well, let's hear what you got.
Because we're going to combine bad ugly, right?
Yeah, we decided.
All right, so
to go
here's my
way.
Combination, and it's going to tie into my rant, and it's going to tie into a further discussion. So here, it's all together. And I will tell you, I had my rant put together right after the game. I said, you know, I got my rant. I already know what I'm going to rant about. But then something happened today. And so it kind of blew up my rant in a way. But then something else happened. So my bad ugly, to get to it, when your defensive line plays as good as ours played, when your linebacking core seems to have really come on, and when you can play man on man, and then you see we get torched when we play Tampa 2. Good Lord, man. Are you kidding me? Now, I know a lot of people were upset with Vaughn Bell on that play where they scored the touchdown to look like it was going to tie the game up. But if you go back and study the film, and somebody already had it up when I was looking at it. Lattimore is really the one who was the culprit on that play. Because Vaughn Bell had no choice but to play where he was playing in the defense that was called, the scheme. But Lattimore let up too soon on the receiver, which then didn't allow Bell enough time to get over.
Right. He didn't get enough of a jam on that particular play.
And I'm telling you, this is what I see time after time. It appears to me that when we play man, all these people who are hating on my boy Crawley, he didn't get beat one time in man-to-man. Didn't get beat.
I disagree with you, but go ahead. Please continue.
He got beat on – well, he didn't get beat. But when they play zone of any type, then it seems that they go that it ends up being on his side of the field. But what I'm saying to you is this. It seems to me, man on man, we do really good. Zone of any type, we don't. So there are two possibilities in my humble opinion as to why that is. Number one, we still have a communication issue. Somehow – our defensive backs are not getting the right message of where they have to go. Or number two, it's just a scheme issue. Somehow, something's wrong with the scheme when we're playing zone, whether it's one high, Tampa two, or three with one in a box. I mean, we have three different kinds of safeties that we're, you know, three different zones that we're playing with the safeties.
Sure.
So that's my bad and ugly, all wrapped up in the one. You're free to disagree.
Well, I'm just... John Brown was hard to handle by all these guys, and there were certain situations, including a play right before halftime, And I'm not blaming that particularly on Crowley. I took the notes, and honestly, I didn't write down who was covering him.
Yeah.
But we gave up. The secondary gives up a big play. There was another play.
I think that was Peanut Butter Jelly who did that one.
Was it Peanut Butter Jelly? So. Okay. And then there was another play that was particularly was Crowley. And it was a fourth down play. And they converted that fourth down play by throwing to John Brown. He was open by I'm going to give him credit. The guy is an absolute speed merchant. But he takes off running, and the cornerbacks are running for the end zone as soon as the ball snapped. And he breaks it off, and it was like, you know, 7-yard cushion when he catches the ball for a first down. It was kind of discouraging. Our secondary, man, there's some things going on. And the fact that the Saints traded for Eli Apple – tells me that they think it's more of a skill issue than it is a just communication or scheme. So to me, and I'm trying to read into what the coaches are thinking, but to me, the fact that they go out and make a trade for a player tells me that they feel like they need to upgrade in player, not scheme. Or and but again, it is the coaches. I'm sure not they're not out there saying, "Hey man, my scheme's just not working."
Well, are we ready to talk about Eli Apple now? Is that you want to dive into
I think
now?
We could talk about him 2 or 3 times throughout the show.
Right. So we know this. Well, hopefully most people know the story by
he
now.
Wasn't he your guy when the draft? You liked him a lot.
That's correct. When we had that draft that year, 3 years ago, when he was drafted, first round pick by the New York Giants. We were sitting together, and I told you guys, I was like, man, Eli Apple, he's still on the board, man. I really like this guy. I think he'd be excellent. This is before we had Lattimore, right?
Yeah.
That's the year we drafted Von Bell.
In the second round, right.
That's right, okay. So, but Eli Apple, and then I thought, man, the Steelers might get him. It was actually a surprise to me that the Giants took him.
Okay.
But I liked him then. Now, he was a first-round draft choice. That is the kind of skill that he has. All right. Now, we trade for him. We give up a number 4 this next year, which we cut our number 4 this year, so no big deal. And then a number 7 the year after. So, you know, we're giving up a 7 in 2020. Who cares?
Well, you know, and if you do it the year after, it's actually an 8th round draft pick.
Well, yeah. I don't know what the hell it is.
You don't know what they say when you trade next year's pick.
Yes,
it goes up a round.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
If I'm making any sense to people out
so,
there.
So in any case, to me, it's like we got this guy for like next to nothing. And he's still on the rookie contract.
Oh, yeah. So we have this year, we have next year,
and then
we have the option if we choose to pick it up.
That's correct.
So,
that's
listen, that's a good value.
Yes, absolutely.
If he turns out to be even just a upgrade, okay, so I read, and again, it's how much you want to put into the PFF stuff. He was ranked like 44th, Eli Apple was.
Yes.
Ken Crowley's ranked 101st.
Yeah.
So if he is just a upgrade to slightly above average, worth a 4th round draft pick that right now with the skill level we have on the team, 4th rounders can't make the squad.
Right, right. So that's what I'm saying. I think it's a heck of a bargain. Now, there's some people out there writing, I read in the New York newspaper, you know, that they're like, oh, this guy's a problem and so forth. Now, here's what I know about the guy, with quote-unquote, being a problem. He didn't like the way he was being coached under the previous coaching staff. They got rid of that guy. Remember McAdoo, whatever his name was?
Yeah.
So there was a change there. And now, like any player, remember, the Pittsburgh Steelers were just like this at the beginning of this season. A lot of grievances on the team because they were losing.
Right. Everything seems worse than it is when you lose. That's right.
So now I'm thinking, this guy's got skills. So a change of scenery, I think, will be a tremendous positive. And isn't it funny how the world turns? We're going to end up with Eli Apple, who I wanted anyway 3 years ago.
Right, right.
You know? So that puts us with 2 first-round draft choices at the corners. I believe they'll move Crowley over to play the slot.
Sure.
You know, and PJ will be number 5 if needed.
Who's number 4? You went left corner, right corner, PJ.
And slot.
I know you have a master's degree, or at least 2 of them, I think.
Yeah.
Math obviously wasn't one of them.
No, actually, math. But anyway, no. But I'm just saying the 3 start is what I mean is that I think the 3 starting people across the line will be slot will go to Crowley rather than PJ.
Okay,
and I think PJ will be the extra guy who comes in.
Well, we'll see. You know? I like Crowley's length. I like PJ's physicality. So we'll see. And you know, it'll be one of those things where one guy plays well, they'll be jerking him in
look,
and out.
You can like PJ's physicality. But tell me what he's done. You know, he's played this season.
He got beat this game a couple
of times.
I could say the same thing about Crowley.
Well, now I'm going to get to my boy.
He, take it easy.
You know, I'm
going to
get to
easy.
My boy because I gotta you know stand up for my man. It's peanut butter jelly time. Peanut that ain't my man.
No,
but that's okay.
All right, I'm just saying.
You know, but our friend Heath sent out a text to us, and I agree 100% with Heath. Just because you bring Eli Apple in, he's still got to prove himself to be better than Crowley. He might be ranked in whatever ranking system is out there, but there's a difference between looking at a piece of paper and standing on the field and doing your business.
No, I agree. I agree. And that's why I always preface it. Anytime I refer to PFF, I always say, if you believe in it.
Right.
So,
and like I said, you know, you never know. The man definitely had skills when he was drafted.
Listen, okay, he's drafted. The reason he was considered a first-round draft pick and all that stuff is because he has all the numbers, all the physical
speed,
attributes
exactly.
that
length,
they feel yeah. like a corner in the NFL needs to be a top-level
yes.
corner.
Yes.
Here's the thing that, okay, and this is the fan in me, the wishful thinking, is, man, change of scenery sometimes does wonders for
yes.
a guy like that. You bring
yes.
him from a losing team to a winning team, something you haven't pointed out yet, and I was waiting for you to say it, is you realize that if we make Coleman a starter, so let's, for the sake of this conversation,
four Ohio State
players in our defense, are all of our starters in the backfield.
What makes you think that Crowley might not step it up because now he's got competition?
A little competition? I can see it. I can see it. Listen, don't go anywhere. When we come back, John Hendricks of the Canal Street Chronicles coming in, visit with us, and then we'll have more Saints
hold
talk.
On, bro. We missed this guy, so okay. What?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. 97.7 Sports Talk Radio.
You're listening to the BS and Beer Podcast. Now back to your two yats and a coon ass.
Sugar-free, gluten-free, fat-free, talent-free, and free-free, the BS and Beer Podcast. Welcome back, 97.7 Sports Talk Radio. As usual, well, we haven't talked to him in a couple of weeks because it's a bye week and whatnot. It's John J. Hendricks of the Canal Street Chronicles. John, welcome in. What an exciting game. And the way that it all ended, it was just improbable. So much to talk about, so much to unfold and break down. The way the Saints played football is generally, from my experience, usually they don't win when they play that type of ball. But they're showing that they can win all kinds of ways, playing hard-nosed football like they did on Sunday or scoring on every drive like they've done in the past this season.
Yeah, you got to appreciate what transpired in Baltimore. I mean, you know, down 17-7. You get the good aggressive play calling on the first drive, doesn't end in points, a 20-play drive. It's kind of unheard of, but, you know, I mean, things like that happen. And, look, I think the defense made some adjustments as the game went on. You know, I think they struggled a little bit with pressure. Alvin Kamara kind of struggled out of the gate on Sunday. But, look, you know, I think the true mark of a team, and, you know, we witnessed it a lot in the 2009 season, this was a second-half team. They were able to put things together. They were able to change it up defensively to get some stops that they needed. And, you know, look, aside that final drive where Flacco connected to John Brown to eventually what would have been the game-tying score, you know, it's just one of those feelings where you got to be happy that it went the Saints' way. Maybe Tom Benson is looking down from heaven trying to help some things out this year.
Well, that's one of the things I was going to bring up. I mean, like, do you believe in that divine intervention, John? I mean, I saw a meme on Twitter, and it had, like, in the background, kind of shadowed Tom Benson's face, and he had his lips were puckered up, and he obviously showing him blowing the ball off to the side. Man, you think about the Browns and the field goals that they missed, the extra points that they missed. I mean, man, could it be Benson's over there helping us from above?
I mean, look, I told you weeks ago, especially after that Browns game, I don't think I've ever remembered a season where kickers have missed that much against the Saints. Like, typically, it doesn't matter who it was, what the situation. Saints could never catch a break, especially at home. But look, I mean, this is just unheard of. And I mean, just that's how the ball breaks sometimes. I mean, it goes your way, like what it did in Baltimore, and sometimes it doesn't go your way, like John Carney in Jacksonville years ago.
Absolutely, and I kind of think, and maybe this is just the poor me of any fan of a team, is you only think bad things happen to you, but when you get on the positive side of these miscues, then all of a sudden, you know, you have to appreciate that sometimes the good things happen. But man, this kind of starting to feel a little bit, and I'm not trying to compare the two teams, But 2009, think about the times where, man, things just seem gloom. It didn't seem like it was workout. And just things seem to fall in place. Seems just to happen the right way, the way that the Saints needed them to. And so far this season, it's starting to feel like that.
Yeah, I think you're seeing a lot of it. And, you know, again, I allude back to what we talked about earlier in the season, and I remember the first game, everybody was like, well, this defense was supposed to be blah, 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 and I made a comment that wasn't too popular, saying you got to give them time. And, you know, that was my whole thing, is the miscommunications, the alignments, all the different things. I mean, if you remember the 2009 defense, they weren't spectacular. I mean, they gave up a lot of yards, but they were able to make stops when it counted. They were able to get the turnovers. And, look, I mean, with this defense now, maybe it's not pressure all game like you want it to be. Maybe it's not, you know, every play is a blow-up play or anything like that. But, look, guys like DeMario Davis making plays when it counts, Cam Jordan making plays when it counts, all these different ones are able to do things that the Saints team needs in a pinch. And, you know, you always welcome seeing stuff like that, and that obviously can help you carry on deep into the playoffs, and postseason is what you're hoping for.
Now, one of the things, and I mentioned this when we first opened up the segment, the Saints, generally, I have found that they don't really play well, and this is why I think we don't generally beat the Baltimore Ravens, because the type of football Baltimore plays. Now it looks like the Saints can handle that smash-mouth approach. A team that comes in there and says, look, you got to stop us from running the ball. We're going to play tough defense. I mean, how many times were we felt like the team was much better, and I'm talking about Baltimore in general, but then there's always that, oh man, the interception return for a touchdown puts you behind the eight ball, or it's the fumble recovery in your own red zone, but there's always something that just kind of blows it up. The Saints managed a team like Baltimore, and when I allude to this, I'm saying a team that plays strong defense, runs the ball, plays hard nose. The Saints were right there. Matter of fact, I would almost argue that the Saints out-Baltimored Baltimore.
Yeah, I would say so. And look, I think that's a big reason why they went more with Alvin Kamara over Mark Ingram. I mean, Ingram was able to run a lot, but, you know, a couple times you remember Teron Armstead out in front as a lead blocker, yep. Whether it's Taysom Hill or Alvin Kamara, kind of brings some speed to the table. Look, I think that's really where you want it. And this is an offensive line that is already patched up, you know, to begin with, because Armstead's been on the injury report. You lose Josh Laribius halfway through. Cameron Tom comes in that people kind of forgot about. You know, you got Warford playing hurt with the back issue. I mean, it's just different things that have come in, and nobody's making excuses. Nobody's doing excuses for this team. And they're just finding ways, you know. If it's not Michael Thomas lighting up the stat sheet, here comes Benjamin Watson and, you know, Tre'Quan Smith making big plays when it counts. I mean, all of that is what matters, right? And just, you know, when you look at how everything unfolds in the NFL, even on that, you know, drive that started at the one, the execution by this Saints team has been pretty crisp overall, if you had to put a grade on it.
Okay, so now I'm going to switch gears a little bit and kind of get your input on all these rumors flying around about Patrick Peterson. On Monday, there was a report that I think it was his brother or his cousin got on Twitter and said, made some comments and made it sound like the New Orleans Saints were the destination, adding fuel to the fire that there could be some trade activity going on. Now, the coach of the Arizona Cardinals said squash it, he's not getting traded, but man, there's a lot of smoke, not to be some fire in there.
Yeah, and look, you know, coaches lie. I mean, we understand that. Coaches don't know the whole thing, the whole picture, and you know, look, I think with Brian McFadden coming out and saying that, I obviously he knows a little something. I think it's picking up steam, and look, if he has to choose his destination, Arizona's a familiar trade partner, kind of. You know, you look back last year with Adrian Peterson, and look, I think there's something to it, and if I'm looking at the Saints and I'm trying to improve my team before the 30th, which is the trade deadline for the NFL, look, it's got to be on that back end, the secondary. Cornerback like Patrick Peterson, maybe he's not what he was a couple of years ago, but I still think he's leaps and bounds an upgrade for this team, especially playing opposite of Marshall and Lattimore, help push him a little bit more too. And look, I just feel like that's a huge missing piece for this team, and it would be such a welcomed addition to this team that would really make people take them seriously.
Okay, so John, let me ask you, what what would you think would be the proper compensation? What would you be willing to give up to get a guy like Patrick Peterson?
Well, look, I mean, you know, you got to think that maybe it's going all in type thing, you know? I mean, let's be real. The window for Breeze is, what, 2 years maybe at best?
And, right.
Maybe something else. So you kind of dipped into next year's cookie jar with the first-round pick for Marcus right. Davenport. You got a full complement of picks the year after in 2021 and 2022. I mean, you also can get some resources in the 2020 draft and 19. I mean, there's stuff there. You can go into whatever you need to get him. But realistically, for Peterson, a guy, I mean, you know, people worry about cap space. That's never been a problem for Mickey Loomis. You'd have to give something good in return for, obviously, a player like that. So first or second, wouldn't shock me. If you can pull some type of Patriots Josh Gordon deal, then I'm all for it, but I doubt that. So it'd either have to be, you know, packaged maybe a couple twos, or maybe a first straight up. I mean, it just depends. But I think they could also maybe give him some assets, player-wise, that might help too.
Sure. Maybe Ken Crawley for Patrick Peterson straight up. Maybe that would work. No, I'm kidding. Hey, let me switch gears one more time. We're going in a familiar foe. We're going in to play the Vikings Sunday night, national TV. It looks like Xavier Rhodes left the game. I haven't really seen much to follow up on that. But Xavier Rhodes, their all-pro, all-world cornerback, left the game and may not be available. I mean, you know, you have an improved offense maybe in Minnesota. Maybe the defense not as strong. What are you thinking about that game on Sunday night?
Well, look, I think, you know, you saw it against the Redskins. If you want to make everybody a real believer in this team, and look, I get it. They're 5-1, but a lot of people still won't credit the Saints for much of anything. If you want to make a believer out of everybody, you got the two games, one against the Vikings, one against the Rams. I think you got to win at least one of those games to come out and be taken really seriously in the NFL right now. I think the Vikings are in a spot where, you know, Kirk Cousins is a huge upgrade over some of the quarterbacks that they faced in the past couple of years. So I think that'll be a huge test. And, you know, who guards Adam Thielen? Who guards Stephon Diggs? Obviously, there's going to be so much of the Minnesota miracle or Minneapolis miracle, however you want to call it, that's going to be replayed there. And, look, I think that this team has the potential. They showed that Baltimore is not, you know, they're not afraid to go on the road and win a game because – Baltimore, look, let's face it, that's a tough place to play, and so is Minnesota.
Sure.
You're going to have a lot more hyped crowd there, but I think they have the mentality right now and the focus and the team chemistry to say, we can go in there and win this game.
Well, I agree with you. I think it's going to be a tough-fought game, and quite frankly, after the game against Baltimore, I look at the Saints a different way. I see a team that can win more than one way, more than just passing the ball. I see a team that can beat you playing smash-mouth football, and maybe that's what you need to play a little bit more of when you play in Minnesota. We have about 30 seconds. John, give me the over and under how many times we're going to have to see that replay of the missed tackle on Stephon Diggs in the playoffs last year.
Well, it depends if you're talking about highlights or during the broadcast. I guess during the broadcast, I'd say about 10. Roughly, and if that
all right,
whole entire day on Sunday when they break down the game, I'd say probably about 100.
We'll keep track of it. It's John J. Hendricks of the Canal Street Chronicles. John, as usual, thank you so much for joining us, my friend.
No problem. Thanks for having me, bud.
97.7 Sports Talk Radio.
Well, it's your old buddy, Chef Pierre Gautreaux. Y'all gather around the radio, and we're going to listen to some BS and Beer podcast. Ooh, ça c'est bon, that's a good show, yeah.
Welcome back to the BS and Beer Podcast 97.7. Tomas Mauricio, Dave Romero.
Here.
On the board, Tyler Kistner, making things happen, checking things out. I don't know what he does over there. He just kind of sits over there today. He don't have nothing to say. So, all right, I see you.
Yeah, no crunching numbers today.
All right. Okay. One of the things I found interesting,
yep.
Did you notice at the end of the game, and I mean late in the fourth quarter, Marcus Williams, I haven't heard much about it since, but was not in the game. And I think I heard injury, but haven't heard anything about an injury. You think you would have heard something. I heard he was standing on the sidelines.
Well, I haven't heard anything else about whether he's injured or not. That'll be interesting to see how it comes out. And, I mean, this is the time we usually talk about injury reports.
Yeah.
My understanding is we came out pretty clean. I didn't really hear the other than Larribas.
And that's the thing. I didn't either. And the fact that I saw a tweet from the Times-Picayune, not the Times-Picayune, but the Advocate writer.
Nick Underhill?
Yeah, Underhill. He's the guy I'm always talking about. I'm like, I can't think of his name. Yeah, and Nick, I'm like, Underhill. You know, the guy that everybody knows, the big one. He sent out a tweet that I saw, and it said that Marcus Williams wasn't on the field. And I think maybe somebody else said injury. I don't know. So we'll find out whether or not he was actually injured or if it was just –
I don't know.
If it was an injury, then I'm like, why is he not in the game? Was it because some failed coverages? Not sure. It's something to keep an eye on. That's all I can say because I don't have any more information.
See, now it makes me think about it in the touchdown catch that they had where Lattimore, I thought, did not play his position correctly. It was Bell who came over. It wasn't Williams.
No, that's right.
So I don't know. Now that you said that, I'll have to go back and look at it again and see if Williams was even in the game.
That's the one thing about trying to watch TV feed to see a safety. Yeah. It's really hard to see who's in the game or what have you. Yeah. So unless you're really looking for it, it's hard to see.
Now, we did see Coleman a lot in this game.
No, we saw Coleman from the beginning of the game. We were like, well, wait a minute.
Who's 29?
Where's Bell? Then all of a sudden, Bell comes up and makes a great tackle. And we're like, okay, so they obviously doing some three safety thing. Yeah. And they put Bell and Coleman. And, you know, Williams was in there too. So I'm not sure. I guess what I'm saying is keep an eye on it. Let's see what develops.
Yeah, because the only thing that I heard was, of course, that Larribas got banged up. And Warford, his back is going to be a day-to-day thing anyway. He's got to really take care of his back. But other than that, Pete's supposed to be back this week from the concussion.
Right.
So we're looking pretty good, I think, as far as injuries are concerned.
You know, and speaking of that, like let's put that in perspective a little bit. We went to a full-out smash-mouth run. And he's our best, I don't know if best, but he's a very, very effective run blocker, and that's Pete I'm talking about.
We didn't have him.
Matter of fact, we went in with Larribas starting. He got injured. We end up with
Tom. That's why I said to you, I was really very, very surprised at how well Tom played. I've liked him from the beginning. Remember, we talked about him
absolutely.
Last year.
Absolutely. You've always been high on him.
And so I'm very happy with what he did. But like I said, Larribas was the only one that I saw. Warford has the back-to-back thing. Now, I know Cam Meredith had a little bit of an issue with a knee, I want to say, or something.
Well, an ankle.
Can't remember. That's why he was inactive for this game. Wasn't he inactive for this game?
I don't.
Or was he?
I didn't think he was. No. I thought he was active for the
game.
No,
you're right. I think 81, I think, was in there.
Yeah, I saw him a few times. I don't think he caught a ball.
No. So that's what I'm saying. I haven't seen anything really of major concern with injuries.
No, but think about it from this perspective. You have guys like the tight end that your guy. What's the kid's name? I said it earlier.
Arnold.
Ben Watson catching, I think, 6 balls. The Saints obviously knew where their matchups were better because they didn't even attempt to throw the ball. Michael Thomas didn't get going till mostly the second half. He might have had a couple of touches. He might have had a drop early. He didn't get rolling until the second half.
Well, that's because they were trying to find a way to negate that blitz. That's the bottom line. They were trying to negate the pressure that was coming from Baltimore, and they did. They did. And so at some point, the way to negate that is you hit the tight ends, you know, you run the ball. And really, it's better for the offensive lineman, from my understanding. I didn't never played offensive line, but my understanding is it's much better for the offensive lineman to do run because they're shooting out, and so they're pushing the other side as opposed to protecting for a pass. So that probably was to the benefit of Warford's back.
All right. Well, here's an interesting little tidbit I got for you.
All right, go ahead.
Saints were 2-121 all time on the road when entering the fourth quarter down by double digits.
Yeah, I saw that.
Now. They're 3-121. So I mean, working on getting that to 500 is gonna be a chore. But it's to me so interesting when you think about the team, how we play, how we usually win, and to think that not only did we play this specialized football that I would not necessarily consider the way the Saints play football. They not only did it, went into Baltimore on the road, got behind, and found a way to not only play good defense and get stops, but to also move the ball and score it. Now, there was one play in particular that I thought I want to mention. Drew Brees, they blitzed Drew Brees. They got their hands on him, and they were dragging him down just as he gets the ball away.
Yeah.
to Michael Thomas, who turns and powers his way for a first down.
Now, on that
was the drive that we eventually went in, and Kamara ran the 2 yard touchdown run. Ball dinger, who loves the Saints now. He goes in there and he does his little video, and it's so funny how he does it. It's like he just takes his iPhone or whatever and takes the TV, and he doesn't have any production value whatsoever.
No,
he just
video. Good,
no, it's good. Always good, and he just does it off the TV or whatever. Yeah. So the point is that it's a crucial situation. The Saints playing smash mouth football. They find a way to not only play that type of football and do it in comeback fashion. Speaking of comebacks, the way that we let the Ravens come back on that last drive, which is very frustrating because, look, right before halftime, the Saints were controlling the game. Maybe that's the best way I would put it.
Yeah.
They give up a huge play to John Brown, which eventually leads to points. And it seems like the teams that we've had in the past that were successful was always the Saints, who got the ball with 1:40 left, 1:10 left, went down the field and scored points before halftime, and always do it at the end of the game. Now it's a little worrisome to me because I'm starting to it's not just a coincidence anymore. And I'm not going to talk about the first half because it's more about the end of the game where it seems like we are completely ineffective at playing, I don't know, what do you call it, prevent defense?
Well, here's what I'm going to say to you. If you play not to lose, you have a good chance of losing. If you play to win, you have a good chance of winning. Prevent defense is just that. Hey, you know what? We're going to let them move wherever they want between the 20s, and then I guess we'll buckle down. On that drive, many times we were only rushing three people.
That was now, a problem, too, and I have that in my notes. That's a problem for me.
Yes, for me, too. Dude, Cam Jordan, time after time, he's being double-teamed, triple-teamed. You know, but it's still pressure, you know? And so suddenly we only go to three, and sometimes Cam is dropping back into that middle kind of coverage thing. It's like, what? Whose scheme is this? You know, to me, again, I go back to scheme.
Here's the problem that I have with the three-man rush, and I agree with you. To me, it's almost like a blitz. You have to catch them off guard. If the quarterback drops back to pass and realizes it's a three-man rush, to me, it seems like what's going on is he kind of takes a deep breath and then just says, hey, man, they're not going to get pressure on me, and sits back there for literally 6, 7, 8 seconds and will eventually find a receiver breaking open. Because not only do you have
– I don't care who you are. You can't cover a man.
And not only do you have this whole field that's wide open, you have clear passing lanes because there's no no rushers
in
your
face. And he's 6'6 to start with anyway, so it's like, you know.
And not just this game, but I don't know how many times I've seen the three-man rush end up with the quarterback just standing back there and then finding a guy open for whether it's a big play or it's a first down or whatever. I just find it, even a blitz. You blitz, sometimes you don't get there, they complete a pass, they pick up 25 yards, it happens. But I don't recall many good things happening when we only rush three guys. What it seems like is the quarterback drops back, takes that deep breath, and then they just find an open receiver.
Well, I'll tell you another one. See, I think that you're looking at Flacco. Flacco's a guy who's shown, if you smack him a couple of times, suddenly he's not throwing the same way. That's what we need. We're not talking Roethlisberger. Roethlisberger, hey, hit me again. Talking Flacco, you know. And I need to talk about the other quarterbacks too, but go ahead.
All right, anyway, when we come back, we're going to do hour number two. Don't want to miss it. We got a Tomas rant. We got all kinds of stuff in our My Bookie Picks. You don't want to miss it. 97.7.
Hold the door. Please come in and just sit here for a while.
Oh, boy, don't waste time to tune into our podcast. Oh, girl, give your time to David Heed and Tomas. We do this every week. Every Wednesday. So don't miss. We do this every week. Everyone is a so dumb miss. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Oh, we have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Oh, boy, don't waste time to tune in.